Good afternoon. Welcome to this afternoon's edition of the Rich Durbin Show. We bring you news and views from the inpatient principal point of view. Very happy to have on in this series of interviews with the primary candidates, Barbara Fuller, running for delegate in District 98. So, yeah, please introduce yourself.
Well, Richard, we've been doing this how many times? Over the years, I've moved along from the Board of Education to a delegate race. I am Barbara Fuller. I chose to run for the delegate position in the 98th district when Delegate Espinosa vacated the position to run for the Senate, a West Virginia Senate. A little bit about me. I am a staunch pro-life candidate. I believe that life begins at conception. There's no other way to describe it. For my own reasons, being adopted, it's kind of the structure of why I'm running. I'm a self-professed and I live what I practice. I practice what I preach. I'm a constitutional conservative. I believe in smaller governments. I believe in individual liberty. And I believe in the rule of law. And getting back to a little bit about me, after my Board of Education run, I put away my politician hat and I said, I'm not running again. I'm going to focus on myself. And I went back to school. So I attend Liberty University. I'm just finishing up my junior year. My degree is a Bachelor of Science in Law and Policy with a concentration in constitutional law, which is how I get my self-professed constitutional conservative. Okay. I'm pro-Second Amendment. I believe that it's one of those inherent rights that we gained when the Declaration of Independence and the Constitution was signed. I am very much so pro-coal and pro-gas. I believe that those two features will provide enough energy for West Virginia to become energy independent. Along with other things that I would like to see, such as possibly nuclear power, because that is probably the cleanest that we have at the moment. I'm very much pro small business. My whole family, we all try to frequent small businesses because they are the cornerstone of our state. And I'm pro school of choice. I always have been. Even when I was running for Board of Education, I felt that it was important that the parents are able to choose where their child should attend school.
Yes. And
be the adult in the room on how their children should be
educated. Okay, that's good. So about the power, energy. So what about solar energy? What's your opinion on that?
So I don't have a problem with individuals putting solar on their own home. That will enable people to get breaks on their energy bills. They are actually smaller panels by design. I do have a huge issue with solar farms. Solar farms are, I should say, solar farms, when they don't feed energy to the county or even the state that they are located in seems to me to be a waste of effort. I am very much aware that if these solar panels will break, they have toxic chemicals in them, mm-hmm. and they could pollute our groundwater.
Right.
If they catch on fire, there is no way to safely put out the fires. Our fire departments are not trained on the ins and outs of putting out lithium battery fires. It's not something that you can do. You hear all the crazy things that, my Tesla went on fire in my garage and they had to let it burn out because there's no way to put out the fire. Mm-hmm. That to me is scary because we have the opportunity that there could be a solar fire or a solar arc, which is when the power is not contained properly, and we could have harm to our emergency services personnel, and that's not something that I think should be on the table.
Okay. Well, there was a bill a couple years ago. I think Wayne Clark was a sponsor, I think came up twice to make solar farms a matter of right. Would you support that or you're opposed to that?
I am very much opposed to it.
Okay.
And I believe in property rights. I do. I mean, mm-hmm. but the fact of the matter is that your property rights end where mine start. And there's when you purchase a property, you have a right, you have a duty, I should say, not to be noxious to your neighbor to the point where you are going to make their property values fall. And that's something that a lot of people don't take into consideration.
Okay, that's a good point. So recently, as you know, Governor Justice vetoed the partial exemption bill for religious exemptions for vaccination for private, it would have been for private school children mostly, and I think also virtual school in West Virginia. Do you agree with that? And would you work toward finally lifting no vaccination, no school policy? Would you work to provide exemptions or just get rid of it altogether, those policies?
Something I just didn't understand about his veto was the fact that these are homeschooled students or they go to a private school or a charter school. And, well, if you're going to look at it from a homeschool perspective, why if the parent does not want that child to be vaccinated, why would we fight that?
That's right, virtual.
But so not if you're the virtual, you're at home, and why do you need to be vaccinated?
Exactly.
There are certain vaccinations, such as measles, mumps, rubella, where mm-hmm. we are all vaccinated, and it keeps the numbers down. And frankly, I don't. I know that my mother had mumps as a child. She and her mm-hmm. twin brother, and well, that's the reason why I'm adopted because since she had mumps, it rendered her incapable of ever having children. So, which is why I'm here and I'm adopted. But I think that as far as measles, mumps, rubella, and diseases like that, that have been treated for years and years and years, I don't have such an issue with vaccinations. Vaccinations such as the COVID vaccination that was rammed down our throats, that was not tested, that still is not being tested, that we are finding out that people are actually becoming sick from it. I have huge, huge problems with that. I would support religious exemptions. I would support not even not just any kind of exemption to
for all vaccines. I mean, COVID isn't mandated. Well, I mean, it was mandated for health workers and military, but getting back to the ones that we require for school. So you're saying you do support religious exemptions?
I do. I do support religious exemptions. And like I said, I think that it's a choice. My children have all been vaccinated. I've been vaccinated. My one daughter, I have one person in my household who has never had the COVID vaccination. And I know that, you know, I would never force her to do it. I would never. And because it's not tested. And
right.
You know, maybe if they gave me some proof or some sort of guarantee that they actually had tested, I might feel differently about it. I mean, it's hard to say what could happen down the road, but I believe that vaccinations are a personal and a private thing.
Okay. All right. Fair enough. So back in 2021, when we had those COVID mandates, well, of course, they went on for some time, then the House of Delegates passed a pretty good bill to make them expire and that they would be reviewed by the legislature. But then it was gutted in the Senate, especially by Senator Trump. And it never, and that was issue was, and then it died or was destroyed basically. So nothing happened. Would you support fixing that? Like if emergency came up, it could happen again. Should the legislature fix that issue and, you know, limit the governor's mandate powers, you know, time limit them or be able to review them and so on?
Well, sadly, I never felt that the governor had any right to just keep us all at home. Especially, I mean, I could see that you could have martial law if we were under war, under attack, if there was imminent danger, but to keep people in their homes because of a potential illness to me was stronger than it needed to be. I'll leave it at that. Would I support it? I would never support giving the governor that kind of power again.
But what I'm saying is he still has it because that wasn't fixed. Like our statute, I mean, I haven't read it real recently, but I know that the issue was the mandates went on indefinitely. And in our code or whatever, West Virginia code, there's no like explicit review process.
There was no expiration.
Right. And that was attempted to fix by the House, but it was gutted in the Senate. So nothing was ever done. Not fixed.
If and when I become delegate, I would be glad to sponsor legislation to fix that. I believe that no one should have that kind of power.
Okay, that's clear. That's good. So you said you are pro-life.
Yes.
So that's really good. So I have a question about that in general. So I think basically, is there too much focus on abortion and not enough focus on the pre-step, meaning like encouraging youth to abstain? And like in West Virginia, we have 47% of births outside of marriage. So should there be more emphasis on abstaining before marriage, which would alleviate about 80% of abortions? And secondly, I guess part of the same kind of line of thought is, do you agree that the breakdown of families, specifically husband and wife, two-parent families, is really the core issue behind everything that's problematic in, you know, now everywhere?
So you and I have been on the same wavelength for many years that I believe that if you are not married, you should abstain. I believe that children have enough stuff going on at school, and to put into the mix sexual relationships makes it harder to be a kid. It makes it harder to learn. It's one of those things that really does not need to be there, because of the fact that kids today don't have it as, you know, have it that easy. They have, you know, they're wondering about whether or not their parents are going to accept their gender or their whatever they feel they want to be. But when you put sexual relations, that is an adult, I mean, it's an adult conversation. When you mix those into teenagers, it's not something that they can handle. It's not something that they can, it's not something that they can handle fully in their brains, because there's just so many other things going on. I would love to see programs out there that teach abstinence for our youth. I would love to see that. As far as the pro-life, I know that we had a reasonable bill that came through, and they did an amendment to it, which was the Hardy Amendment, that said that in cases of rape or incest, it was okay to terminate the pregnancy, as well as in case of the mother's health. Well, my stance is, well, and I think that I've shared this before, is yes, I am adopted, and the my conception is questionable. And I was floored when my legislators felt that I had no right to live. I mean, because, you know,
right,
that's a horrible thing to realize. I mean, the fact of the matter is that, you know, you wake up one day and you're like, wow, my legislators feel that because of I'm a product of rape, I don't have a right to live. I should have no voice. My life has no meaning and no merit. Well, I'm here to tell everybody is that my life does have meaning. It does have merit. And I have a very, very large voice. What I'd like to see, instead of prosecuting these babies that were conceived, well, maybe we should prosecute the person who actually did the crime.
Yeah.
I mean, that just makes sense to me. I mean, if you're going to rape somebody, or you're going to have an incestuous relationship with somebody, it's not that child that should be punished and killed. I'm not saying that the person who committed the crime should be killed, but that person should be punished. Mm-hmm. And maybe if there were strong enough punishments to go along with those crimes would not occur as often as they do. I know that in West Virginia, the amount of abortions that are performed for either of those two incidences are very, very low. I mean, it's almost negligible. I think that they were just trying to put through whatever they could and just to make other people happy. Well, it doesn't make me happy. That bill does not. It's something that I would make my life missions to repeal.
All right. Okay. All right. That's clear. You mentioned on your website about HB 207, about hormone therapy. Now, I was talking with Daphne Andrews, and I think she mentioned that there's an exception in the current bill For if the parent or somebody or the child says they're suicidal or the parent thinks they are, they can still get it. Is that what you're talking about, fixing that or something else?
Well, I don't think that we should use hormone therapy to change genders of children.
Right.
Period.
But the bill we have supposedly provides protection, or does it? Or is it really not? It sounds like it's faulty.
I think it is faulty, and I tend to agree with Daphne. I would like to put through a clear bill that gender altering on anybody. I mean, think about it. You have someone who's 10 years old that says they want to be a girl or they want to be a boy, and you're going to either chemically castrate them or give them hormones so that they take on the aspects of the other gender. Okay, well, these are children. And, you know, I think that when I was 10 years old, I maybe wanted to be a fireman because I liked the red truck.
Right.
And then I grew up and I wanted to do something else. And I've always wanted a pony. Our children's wants change daily. And I think that the options that they're giving them for hormone therapy are not something that you can just walk away from.
Right. Okay. So it sounds like that needs to be fixed. Yeah, I think Tom Takubo came up with that. I don't know if he's like in bed with the pharma companies or what. But anyway, came up with that.
I think that he works for WVU hospitals.
Well, I know that. I'm not sure. But I think he's the one who gutted or messed that bill up or gutted it basically or whatever you want to call it. Okay, well, it'd be good if that can be fixed. I agree with you. That's insane. How can you do permanent stuff like that to minors?
Wrong. And think about it. A minor, someone under the age of 18 can't even have a gun. But right. You're going to give them the adult choice to change their gender. It makes no sense. It just does not. It's something that I just don't understand. How can you give one class of people all of these rights and then take them away from somebody else? I mean, we're all people. We're all the same. You know, it's one of those things that just I'll never understand.
Okay. Let's shift to the topic of election integrity. So actually, I was just interviewing Mac Warner running for governor. And he's a Secretary of State. So he was explaining, you know, I was expressing that I don't feel so comfortable introducing these new technologies, like having the black box, what I call black box machines, which apparently he said all counties now have those machines or will have them. I guess the counties don't have to use them. I didn't ask him that, but that's my understanding. And then we have the tabulators and so on. And I know those initially, they only had a few machines, which caused huge unnecessary delays, like at Blue Ridge Elementary, where I vote, which is a bigger precinct. Anyway, all in all, what are your thoughts on election integrity in West Virginia? Like, does it need to be looked into? Can we make it more secure? Is it okay? What are your thoughts?
So my thought is that, and I know our county clerk is very proud of Jefferson County's election integrity and her integrity. And I'm not questioning that. But what I do question is that I have seen the videos and I've seen the testimony of, and the name escapes me, but basically he testified in Georgia or South Carolina about how even though those machines don't have internet going through them, somebody has to program the machines to function. So My question would be, for integrity wise, is who's programming them, and how do I know that at any given time that someone can't come in and change a little program because all they use are thumb drives? How do I know that someone can insert a thumb drive that says, okay, after every 3 votes, you're going to change it? This is not something that the county clerk would know about. It's not something that necessarily Mac Warner would know about. This is only somebody who is in charge of the programming of the machines at the factory. So, do
Right.
I have a problem with those little black boxes? Yeah, I do. I do. Because with what I see with AI now, the artificial intelligence, I don't trust my computer. I don't trust that I won't be recorded and have me talking some other language, doing who knows what, because the possibilities are endless now. Do I think that we need to simplify voting, kind of like we used to do? I remember going to the voting booth with my mom, and she would put her slip in, and I would be able to click the little levers down, and then we would pull the curtain, and her vote would be tabulated. And I guess that would be where the hanging chad came in, because it didn't poke through the paper enough. But that's something that can't be changed. That's something that it's simple. It's not run on electricity. It's
Right.
not
Yeah, I
like
kind of
a
agree with you.
program.
I mean, it's you're putting a lot of variables in there that are unknown. And there's plenty of research showing that these machines can be hacked. I
Oh,
mean,
yeah.
I was on with one of the congressional guys, and anyway, he worked in cybersecurity. He wasn't giving any specifics. But the point is, I mean, look what the FBI does. They're tracking everybody's everything. All these people are at the Capitol, they arrest them, they get all this data legally or illegally from the phone company and anybody, they're tracking them all over the place and doing all kinds of stuff. And so we want to use this little black box, and you're absolutely right. They're not open source. They don't tell the who programmed it or what's in there. And anyway, it can be changed too. So yeah, I don't know. I like the simple better too. Like some people say, paper ballot. Whatever can be done toward that end, I think is good.
It's simpler, but it's more time consuming. I think that the move to go to what we have now was for, because this is the computer age and we need everything right now. We need our results right now. We need to know who won right now. So that came at a cost.
Yeah. And in Arizona, I've been following that somewhat, like Michelle Swinnick, I think that's how you pronounce her name. And they had huge amounts of regularities with their ballot counting machines, and we use ballot counting machines. I understand from a couple people that supposedly they're, however many people come in, it has to verify. But still, like you say, the machine's counting the ballots. Oh, I forgot to ask him too, do these machines ever kick out ballots? And do we have any ballot adjudication? Because I know in some places, like in I think the infamous Antrim, Michigan, or whatever, 2/3 of all the ballots were kicked out and adjudicated. And that means somebody looks on the ballot and says, oh yeah, I think this person voted for Biden. It might be the opposite of whatever it is. Anyway, I'm sorry, I don't trust it. Sorry, Mac Warner, whatever.
No, and I agree. I think that, and like I said, I don't think that it's on. I'm not questioning their watch. I'm not questioning our county clerk's watch. I'm questioning the morals of those that program the machines.
Right. There we go. All right. Very well stated on that. What about any issues that are on your heart or mind, or other issues, maybe things we haven't coming toward the conclusion, haven't talked about, or if you want to differentiate yourself, I see you have one challenger, Republican challenger, if you want to differentiate yourself from your challenger or anything like that, go right ahead.
I will do that in a second. So one of the things that another reason why I'm running, and I've made I've not made it hidden. When I was born in New York, and I'm a New York adoptee, and I have worked with, I was on it's called NYARC, it's the New York Adoptee Rights Coalition. I was part of the coalition while we were working with the governor of New York State, trying to pass, it's not adoptee reform. What it is they're open records. So it would be adoptees being able to obtain their original birth certificate.
Okay.
Because a lot of people don't realize that when you are adopted, whether you're adopted as a baby or you're adopted as a 2-year-old, 4-year-old, or 5-year-old, even if you're adopted at a 19-year-old, that your birth certificate is changed to your new parent's name. And they wipe out the old name. They literally say, what's new is new, and your old one is sealed. It's put in an envelope and it's sealed. So we weren't unsealing the records. What we were doing is we were making it available that New York adoptees were able to apply for their original birth certificate, and they were going to pay the same price that you would pay for a standard birth certificate. It would be marked for non-identification purposes, because you cannot use it because your name is changed. You cannot use it for identification, but it was your unaltered original birth certificate. One of the things that I would like to bring forward, we have had numerous bills come through the legislature, and they were essentially making a new class of people, and that new class of people were adoptees. They said that if you were adopted, you had to be 18 years old. Okay, that's fair. You had to have graduated high school. Well, not all adoptees graduate high school, and that shouldn't be a reason why you don't get your original birth certificate. And they wanted to see that you were enrolled in secondary schooling. Well, we all know that not everybody goes to college, so that's a little bit of an insult.
Right.
And there were some other things that were put into it that I really just could not get my hands wrapped around. So I actually come with a bill. I have one of the top-ranking adoption attorneys, who's a friend of mine, drafted a bill, and I've tried to pass it off on others before, and it kind of went unfounded. And so when I make it down there to Charleston, I'm going to come with a bill, and I'm going to stand there kicking and screaming until somebody looks at it.
Okay. Maybe you can get some co-sponsors. Hopefully. That's a good thing. I mean, adopted children do want to know their identity. That's true.
Yeah.
That's very, very common. So I think, I'm not sure what the motive was, why things are sealed. It's been traditional, but I guess the move now is more open.
Talking about what makes me different than my opponent. Well, I have, I guess, about 15 years worth of experience. I'm a mother of 4 children that have gone through West Virginia schools. I am a military wife. I have had to live on small budgets, so I understand about not overspending. Mm-hmm. I think that there's a lot of differences between the two of us. And you know, he has some really good qualities that he should be proud of. I think that my age and my perspective is what makes us difference.
I really appreciate your, time coming on today.
Thank you.
All the best. So I'll put this out on the Rich Urban Show. It'll be available on any podcast platform or on video at visionroot.org. Hope it helps people to decide.
Thank you so very much.
Thank you.
Have a blessed evening.
You too. Okay. Bye-bye.
Bye.